Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Yeah, the money component would be potentially for treatment or for addressing the issue where, okay, if we've solved or at least helped reduce on the front end opioid addiction, but then what do you do with those who are already addicted? So I think there will be some dollars associated with that. We don't have a lot of dollars in general, but certainly that's going to be a priority area.
Be it congressmen, legislators, or voters, they should only be voting on one item. They should not be forced to have two different items in a bill or an initiative, one that they like and one that they don't like, and have to vote them both in.
Really what Senator Kavanaugh is trying to do and the legislature has been trying to do for a while is just make it harder to do citizen initiative, make it easier to challenge them.
I don't think bragging about whose nuclear button is bigger, you know, accomplishes anything good. So I hope the president finds another way to conduct diplomacy.
Joining us to talk about Arizona's legislative session that starts next week and the new battle between President Trump and Steve Bannon and where Arizona fits in are former lawmaker Stan Barnes, president of Copper State Consulting, and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here. Great to be here.
All right, Stan. So you probably haven't had a chance to read this new revelatory book related to Donald Trump and Steve Bannon. But one key thing for us, certainly at this table, has to do with where Kelly Ward now fits in, Senate candidate Kelly Ward. She has been a supporter of President Trump, but also is being backed by Steve Bannon. How tough a position does this put her in?
Yeah, it makes an already tough position tougher. I said when Jeff Flake decided not to run again, that was her worst day because she had a playbook that was going to work for her, I think. And then when Jeff pulled out, she could take that playbook, tear it up, and throw it in the Colorado River because it was no good anymore. Now the play of riding whatever wave there is that extends out of the Trump White House is far more complicated for her. She's, I think, going to have to choose sides. Mm-hmm. And that splits constituencies, makes her look slightly artificial. It's not comfortable.
Sam, does that make her weaker against what we expect to be Martha McSally entering this race at some point?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that she was particularly strong candidate to start off with, but, you know, she fumbled a lot in the early days. But I think that even now with what's happened here with the Bannon-Trump fallout, I think that it does her no favors. And whether it's Congresswoman McSally or anybody else from the right that enters that primary, I think that they're in a great position to take advantage of this melee.
Stan, why do you think that Kelly Ward will have to pick sides? I mean, is this the kind of thing that do voters really care about what the president says and what one of his advisors says and if they're liking each other or on the outs at any particular moment?
I think you're making a very good point, Mark. There's really two campaigns. There's kind of the inner and the outer. And the outer you're talking about, no, I don't think voters make that distinction. Some do, but very small. I think it's mainly a matter of the inner and who has her ear and where she raises money and where the enthusiasm comes from and where the third-party money, the independent money from out of state, whether it's Bannon-directed or not, that sort of thing.
Safe to say that inner campaign directly affects the outer campaign?
Yeah, it does. In fact, I think it's the more important one, honestly. The inner campaign also involves who is actually in the race before the race, and then the setup for what you say and how you say it and how you look and how you comport yourself. All that's the inner, and then the voters receive the product to make a decision.
And I would just want to add that I think that Doug Jones was an absolutely fantastic candidate in Alabama, but I think that one of the things that contributed to his victory was that Republicans didn't come out for Luther Strange, which is the more establishment candidate. And I think that Republicans seeing what happened in Alabama in the primary probably are not going to let that happen in Arizona and in other places. So I think that the Roy Moore candidate in Arizona is Kelly Ward, and I don't think that the establishment, so to speak, is going to really kind of let that calculus happen.
Yeah, again. I think Roy Moore had some extraordinary problems, right. But you're not wrong. I'm not disagreeing with you. Kelly is in that category. But what is pregnant, I think, in the room is in the state is the vacuum that exists. We have a U.S. Senate seat that is wide open, and mm-hmm. Kelly Ward's the only person on the Republican side. Yeah. And that's crazy.
Right.
Now, Stan, we're about more than 8 months away from the primary season. How important, how valuable do you think an endorsement from President Trump is going to be in Arizona at that point? He still remains pretty popular among Republicans.
Yeah, I think in the primary, it's going to be the game maker. And you say we're 8 months away. We are about 8 months away from Election Day. But the whole of the fun is going to start now. Don't leave that out. The journey, Steve. It's about the journey, okay?
And you've taught me that over the years.
Yes, I have. In fact, I think that calculus is infecting those running in the special election to replace Trent Franks. Mm-hmm. Who can get their arm around Trump, or who can get Trump to put his arm around them?
Right.
Do you expect, Steve brought up Martha McSally. We're now into the new year and still nothing from her on this race. Are you still expecting her to get in?
I am. I'm expecting her to get in. I don't know why she's waiting. I think she's certainly raising her profile behind the curtain, having fundraisers and out of her district and that sort of thing, other parts of Arizona, because all of a sudden her district will be Arizona. But I'm second guessing from the back bleachers. I don't know why she's waiting, but she's waiting for some strategic reason. I can promise you that. But I do expect she'll get in, and I think she'll be the one that the Republicans that we think of as mainstream will rally behind.
Sam, on the Democratic side.
Yeah.
Is Kyrsten Sinema, obviously not outwardly and publicly, is she licking her chops?
I mean, I think that she has a lot to be excited for, and I think that any good candidate takes any other opponent seriously. So I don't think that she's, sleeping in any particular morning, but I think that she has a lot to be excited about some of the recent events.
Let's go to the next thing on the Democrats, guys, which I'm really intrigued by, and I'm going to force Mark to talk about this more. But Catherine Miranda has decided to challenge Ruben Gallego in the congressional primary. Gallego has been considered kind of one of the up-and-comers in the Democratic Party, Sam. But we also know there's something behind the scenes of the two of them going on. How significant is it that she steps in, and is there something deeper there?
I mean, I think that the family feud, so to speak, has been in the background for quite a while. But I mean, from pure actually getting things done, I mean, Congressman Gallego has been there, and he's definitely a rising star and in many ways an established star. And you know, from a political perspective, Ruben had bested Miranda when they both were in the state house. So the votes, I'm not sure, are there from a political perspective. And you know, this is a district that went almost 75% for Hillary Clinton in the last general election. So if there is going to be a fight, it is going to be in the primary. And the people who come out for a Democratic primary are going to look for those core issues. And Catherine Miranda has, in the past endorsed Governor Ducey and has waffled on issues related to Planned Parenthood. So I think that a lot of the math is not in Catherine Miranda's favor.
Sam, there's often a conventional wisdom that a contested primary is good in the long run, that it gets candidates tested, it gets them ready for the general. I'm wondering, in a race like this, which, as you say, is heavily Democratic, you have an incumbent, is a contested primary a good thing for either Ruben Gallego or Catherine Miranda?
I mean, I don't think primaries are ever a bad thing. I think primaries are fun. I mean, sharpening steel is always a
fun
a
is
fun
different
activity.
Than good, though, isn't
yes.
it, for a candidate?
And here I am, as Stan mentioned, from the bleachers, everything looks fun on the outside. But, I mean, I think that sharpening positions and bringing individuals out throughout the year, right? I mean, you're going to have folks interested in a special congressional race in February in the primary, and then we're going to have a lot of activity around the legislative session, and then we're going to have contested primaries all across the state in August leading into a general election that is likely going to be a wave election. So I don't think from that perspective that a primary is going to be a bad thing for turnout at all, and I think that it could be potentially a very ugly primary, but I think that as the facts go, I think that this is Ruben Gallego's race to lose.
Yeah, before Steve says it, I'll say it. I know something about congressional primaries. Nothing like firsthand experience to teach you. It will be painful, and I'm sure Congressman Gallego is not excited about this because no one is universally loved, and the first thing it does is prove who doesn't love you as the incumbent. And he's going to find out who's laying in the weeds and really doesn't like him personally or how he comports himself, that sort of thing. There's also the pro-life issue, and you touched on it, waffly on Planned Parenthood. Catherine Miranda is a pro-life Democrat. They still exist in the elected office, and that's a meaningful thing. And so I think she does have an issue, at least that issue, to talk about. And then there is the general belief that incumbents are in trouble and that there's a cloud of scandal over the national capital, the state capital, mm-hmm. that there's going to be a wave election, that there's just voters are unrest, the turnout models may be different. So Catherine has a lot, very little to lose in order to make this play. I'm sure it's not going to be fun in the family fight, though.
In terms of nothing to lose, though, she continues to get elected to the legislature. Is this just a matter, do you think, of her looking to do something different? Is she not wanting to go back to the state capitol?
Yeah, it gets frustrating to be in the permanent minority in the state capitol, which Catherine's been in. She's never known the majority. And, the U.S. House might turn over. So who knows? I think it's just a bigger brass ring and more exciting. Why anyone wants to go to Congress, having thought about it myself.
You did more than think about it.
Thanks. you could look at yourself in the mirror and say, really, what am I doing this for? But nonetheless, Catherine's had this desire for some time. Mm-hmm. This is not the first time she's flirted with this.
Stan Barnes of Copper State Consulting. Also here, Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. And our discussion continues, and ridiculing of Stan may continue as well. Stay with us. Good morning. This is the show on 91.5 and KJZZ.org in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. It is the Friday Newscap with Stan Barnes, president of Copper State Consulting, and Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Coming up next Monday, the next legislative session begins, and there's a lot to talk about. Stan, I want to start first of all, though, with there's been that cloud. First of all, it started with Don Shooter, but there are policies to be implemented. There are investigations to be finished when it comes to harassment at the state capitol. How much do you think that will dominate the early part of the session?
I think it's going to be the single biggest factor in the politics of self-governance in Arizona this whole session, unless for some reason it's expunged early, but it doesn't look like it's going to be. You know, self-governance is not an easy thing anyway. And when you put on top of it not only the sexual harassment thing, but as Senator Shooter himself has kicked off the who's sleeping with who allegations, then all of a sudden the normal dynamic between members is fractured. And it's like Survivor Island. No one trusts anyone, and knives go in the back. And it's going to be a very difficult session. We're going to watch this investigation lay its cards on the table, see where the shrapnel goes, and then people will go into self-preservation mode politically. None of that is good for making policy or anything dramatic, for sure.
Now, Mark earlier this week talked with Speaker Mesnard. How do you guys think he's been handling this so far?
I think he's been doing a great job. I mean, after an initial kind of thing that it was going to be an internal investigation, I think he made the right decision to bring in outside counsel to kind of have an independent eye on what's happening. And I think that he's very, very excited to talk about policy. But I think that he and his team are doing everything right to be able to handle this in the right way.
Yeah. A speaker of the House hadn't had a hot potato like this since Jane Hull in the ASCAM thing of way back in 1991, and that's the comparison. And I think he's done well with it. It's no fun to be the guy that has to make these decisions, but as I've told him, as he's told me, this is part of leadership, and this is a very important space, the Speaker of the House in a controversy. I think he's doing well with it.
Oh, the Katie Hobbs, the Senate Minority Leader, said this week that she thinks that depending on how this investigation into Representative Shooter turns out and what repercussions there are, depending on what the investigation ultimately finds, that she's expecting more allegations to come out, that more people might feel comfortable coming out and saying, yes, this has happened to me as well. Do either of you think that is also the case?
Yeah, I think the number one factor with that, Mark, is what the investigators are doing is behind the curtain. And those who are making accusations don't have to be in the public square, which I assume is the big hurdle in this whole thing anyway. So if the investigators, which are bipartisan and attorneys, are going to allow for accusations to be made within anonymity, then I think there's going to be a pretty widespread swath of accusations made that affects more than a few members.
Right. I just think that what we've seen over the course of the last three, 6 months, even into last election cycle, you know, it takes a lot of courage for women and anybody to come forward and accuse people in power of these sort of actions. So I think that being able to do it in a space where there is anonymity is something that I think is helping some individuals come forward with frankly painful stories that need to be heard by people who have just kind of brushed issues like this aside too long.
You can already hear the ricochet among constituencies, though, like, you know, being accused without facing your accuser and where's the evidence and that sort of thing. So none of this is going to be clean or easy. But I anticipate that given the bipartisan nature and the serious soberness of it, that there'll be kind of this plethora of evidence that will be laid in the public square, and then the accused can make their own decision about how they handle it, right? I think that's what they'll do.
And Sam, based on what people on the right and left have said, and we talked to Glenn Hammer of the Arizona Chamber of Commerce earlier in the show, there's going to be, hundreds of millions of dollars added to K-12 education funding, right, during the session?
You must have only been talking to my friends. Yeah, I mean, I think that you hit on it. I think education is going to be one of the big things that we're going to be talking about for the next 4 months, or maybe the next 35 days if we wrap up a short session. Just kidding. That's wishful thinking. But, you know, I think that obviously the governor is unofficially going to kick off his reelection campaign on Monday with his State of the State address, and I think that everyone would be surprised if education issues aren't in every single paragraph of that speech.
Stan?
Yeah, when we get away from the who's sleeping with who phenomenon, then education is going to be the thing. There's some boxes that it's in. The Republicans aren't going to raise revenue for it. But they're going to appear, or they're going to try to appear, to be doing everything else possible. And I don't know what the laundry list is. A year ago, the governor had, 18 different points, right, and set expectations pretty high. And I think he feels like he needs to continue to deliver on those. I'm going to be interested to hear how he follows up this year.
The governor has said that he's looking at asking his state agency directors to look for efficiencies, look for savings that they can come up with to find extra money for things, especially like K-12. Arizona has never seemed like a state that had particularly bloated state government. I mean, is there enough change in the couch cushion, so to speak, to make a meaningful difference?
That bloated state government thing has been the campaign speech for most Republicans for the last 25 years. How could you say that?
Hey, sorry.
The short answer is I think that is the path they're going to take, and I think they're going to try to stitch it together to make it as symbolically meaningful as possible, although and Sam's side of the aisle and many others, it will not satisfy. It will be seen as symbolic and not real. The governor's efficiency efforts are real. I've dealt with a lot of folks in different agencies, and I've dealt with a lot of governors that have tried to do this. In fact, every governor has done this in the modern era. But this one feels very real with that. But can you then scrape that money into a pile and point at it and say, this is meaningful and will have an impact on the K-12 system? I don't know.
And not to be disrespectful, Sam, toward lawmakers, but there always is beforehand. It's usually from the minority party. Are there going to be any crazy bills? Are there going to be any bills that embarrass Arizona potentially? Or Governor Ducey, Speaker Mesnard, are these folks that try to keep these under control?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Speaker Mesnard did a decent job last session tamping down some of the things with whether it was the so-called riot bill or some of the other things. So I think there might be some outlandish bills. It is an election year, but I think that folks are also focused on getting out of there and getting into the election. And in my mind, I'm not sure if Stan sees anything different, but for me, there's three big issues that we need to take care of on top of the budget before we get out of session. One of them is education, right? That's going to be top line. The other one is the opioid crisis. We need to deal with that, and I think that there's a lot of bipartisan agreement around what needs to be done. There are plenty of disagreements on exactly what to do. I think that for some folks, we see it as a public health crisis, and we need public health solutions to that crisis. So, you know, but I think there's a lot of room for agreement on a response there. And the other one is going to be water. Water has been a huge issue over the interim, and I think that there'll be a handful of different legislative solutions offered up that will be hotly debated over the next 40 days.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that's the three right there. The the nature of things is that they want to get out early. My guess is, my prognostication right here on live radio, is it's going to be short and painful. And we all know it's going to be painful. That's an easy guess. But I think it's going to be short because the desire to get out into campaign. I was with the governor last night in a small crowd, and that was one of the things he mentioned was, let's do the people's business and get out of there. And that generally means find the votes for the budget, and there's no extra money. It's not going to fight over anything special. And then everything else, the sabers will be rattled at, and then they'll get out of there and go campaign.
When you say short, do you think under 100 days?
Yeah, that's what I think. That's been done. Now, if Congressman Andy Biggs were still Senate president, it would be.
It'd be like a week, wouldn't it?
No, it might be more than a week or 35 days, but it might be like 85 days, which he led one time. So it's going to be in that range. Yeah. It all depends on wrangling the votes. But remember, at half of the new Senate after that election is going to be Republicans coming from the House. They all want to get out and campaign. Plus, we got members being appointed, vacancies, all of that.
That's right. If we're still in by Earth Day, I think that
remind me,
be
as a Republican, what day is Earth Day? I've lost track.
Stan Barnes of Copper Stake Consulting, Sam Richard of Creosote Partners. Guys, thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.